Chapter 4. How would you find this guy, Roland? That was something that did need to be addressed. It was a bit more dire than someone losing a job. Even though admittedly Marlene's deal sounded pretty hokey the way it went down. But here the situation you had, Roland might kill Holly. Chris knew, as in some of his other cases, he could be projecting way off the charts, and the two phone calls Roland made to Holly when she and her supposed husband decided they'd wait until there were three to take action, that those could be it forever, and the mope had moved on. But the problem a lot of these came down to was the maybe not. So if the guy persisted and assaulted her, which let's face it, he threatened to do, then it's hard to live with yourself from here on out, and you had control of it, theoretically, and you sat on your rear end, assuming bad people could transform themselves into good ones. Chris thought back to his last conversation with Holly. Of course, there was last night the writing group thing, but forget that. When she laid it on him previously, and where he should have been more alarmed, except that the parallel triggered more urgency with the guitar maker gallop north and overshadowed the Roland threat that was right in your face at that point. But it was in the nest. Kay's last night, after the four of them had dinner and Kay and Finch got their own table and Finch started waxing philosophic and Kay barely moved a muscle. Chris got to know Holly a little bit then and finally got around to asking her about the disturbing development, quote, that she'd referenced at the pastrami place regarding her trying to dig on the homicide case from Finch's motel. Chris had assumed she'd uncovered a related crime or some disturbing development or information on how this one went down. But no, that wasn't it. It was the Roland mope whose name Finch had overheard as a possible lead, Holly tracking him down and him telling Holly yes, he had some information for her, and her meeting him in South Central L.A. against her better judgment, and Roland, no surprise, not having anything for her. Holly's description to Chris in the crow's nest was something like, quote, Roland was a creepy individual, tattoos all over his neck and head that looked homemade. He didn't give me anything that I could use for the case, but he told me to come back any time that he was going to fuck the daylights out of me. She pointed out, of course, that she didn't speak that way typically, but was replaying the encounter with Roland for accuracy's sake. Holly had continued telling Chris that when she got back to the newspaper office, a senior reporter told her to call the cops, which she did, and she was informed Roland was a convicted felon but currently free and not in violation of anything. The police follow-up suggestion had been to simply not contact him further, but that's when the phone calls from Roland started. Then she said a female officer did sort of take her case, and the woman seemed concerned and suggested a restraining order. Holly said she considered the pros and cons, that she might be making a bigger deal out of it than necessary, plus the hassle, and that's when she and her yacht broker guy from Armonk made the decision to wait for three more before proceeding, meaning restraining order, private investigator, the whole nine yards. There had been, of course, two more calls, but not the third. The second one a month ago, she said, which made it closer to 6 weeks now. And that's where we're at, Chris thought. Holly did point out that her editor said let it go, meaning the homicide story, and let the LA Times and cops figure it out. that a beat reporter earning minimum wage at the weekly Daily Gull didn't need to be a hero. She said that's how she was handling it, and frankly, didn't seem real concerned anymore. She was certainly playful enough at the writing thing, though man, her own piece that she read really wasn't very good, was it? Guys like Roland, though, you knew them. They didn't just fade away. Sorry. Sure, it's conceivable Holly would never hear from the mutant again. But what? If that was 75% certain, you were going to roll the dice on the other 25? Nah. And what about the inevitable someone else that this guy, sooner or later, would be similarly going after? You could tout your prison reform until you were blue in the face, and Chris was convinced the system was doing its best and that many of the convicts deep down did want to improve their lives. But he was also convinced there were humans born evil who weren't going to be reformed. It was also hard to dismiss Chandler's reaction from a couple weeks ago when Chris asked him for a lead on Gilda Spinnaker, the guitar maker gal's pursuer. And Chris mentioned she'd filed a police report on the guy. That do anything? Chandler had said. Chris answered that Gilda said it stopped it. Nothing since. Chandler said, uh-huh, and that he wouldn't take that to the bank. The point being, Chandler had been around these guys 100 more times than Chris or anyone else he knew. Chandler had put a ton of these guys away, also defended a whole bunch of them. Who knows, maybe even enlisted a few of them for his own dealings, such as the Craigslist motorcycle fool. But one thing for sure, Chandler didn't trust these guys. So back to the issue of how you find Roland Villanueva. That much he'd gotten from Holly, the last name and where he was at least the day Holly met him. Chris supposed one way was drive over to South Central and start asking questions, except he figured you'd get robbed or carjacked or killed, or all three. You couldn't simply ask Holly for obvious reasons, since if something did happen, you can't be the one coincidentally poking around for information. You could ask Finch, and Chris had a hunch that yes, you could trust that son of a bitch to keep his mouth shut, that he did have a bit of a streak in him. But Finch likely didn't know more than he told Holly, which is he heard the murder victim and her alleged boyfriend utter the name Roland a couple times the night before the incident in the motel lounge where they served the complimentary happy hour appetizers, which Finch had to add in weren't bad. There was in fact a barbecue involved. The point being, you could expose yourself to Finch as being interested in this Roland with probably no upside. So no, forget him too. Holly was obviously pretty resourceful and dug around the way journalists do and did locate the guy. And Chris was one of those once, a journalist himself. But there were obviously tricks of the trade that modern newspaper folks had at their disposal, not to mention sources. Speaking of which, could you actually impose on Chandler again? Chris decided you couldn't right now. Chandler was your once and future tennis partner. And let's face it, you'd done little or nothing for the guy in return, considering the jams he'd helped bail you out of, at least indirectly. Sure, you could tell Chandler enjoyed playing lawyer again, that retirement wasn't entirely floating his boat, but there was a limit. Especially after the last one, where, first of all, more to the point, Chandler had to make the desperation call to you. But you woke the guy up in the middle of the night explaining he gave you the wrong William White when you were 2.5 blocks from what you assume was the right William White's house out in Montana. So nope, not this time. And Chris knew you had to go old school, which a hit in the public library for the umpteenth time would yield you. And gee, the day was getting on. It was after 3, and he hoofed it up the hill and down into town, but had to stop at Starbucks first, and one thing led to another, and he got into it with a guy about the latest college admission scandal, how USC football always seems to wipe their hands of that stuff when they're probably the worst offenders, and it wasn't like the other guy was going to stand up and bring it to blows or anything, but it took plenty of time off the clock. Chris came up for air. Man, what a dumb argument. And asked the guy what time he had, and the guy said 4:38, and Chris flew out of there, and luckily the MB library was open Saturdays until 6, but still. You could try the normal channels, you Google the deadbeat's name, you try the white pages, the other people searches, you try to put it together. Pain in the ass is what it boiled down to, especially at the end of the day when there were multiple better things you could be doing, and all that nonsense being performed, odds are you come up short or finger the wrong guy. Chris got up from the computer and made a second trip to the water fountain, all that scrambling around just to get here, giving him a thirst. And this time there was an Asian kid getting a drink. High school age, plenty of acne, black solid rim glasses. He'd seen the kid before here. They had these glassed-in cubicles in back on the third floor like small offices that you could reserve by the hour. You'd see group study sessions in there and other stuff too, seniors doing art projects, people recording YouTube videos, kids sometimes lounging around with their skateboards on the center desk. But this Asian kid was all business, which Chris admired, seeming to reserve the cubicle for himself alone, and likely working some upper calculus project that would feed into an application to Stanford or MIT soon enough. Chris stopped the kid and said, "You ever do research projects? I mean, not math or science, but more human interest?" "Yeah," the kid said, amused, like, "is the Pope Catholic?" and waiting for the punchline. "Okay, good then," Chris said. "If you were going to interview, I don't know, like let's say someone coming out of prison on their adjustment to civilian life, for example, and you were looking for a specific person to speak to, how would I?" the kid said, "or have I?" "Wait, you have done that?" Chris said. "No, I'm trying to establish your question. Let me look." And he picked up his phone, and it took all of 20 seconds, and the kid says, "Try findaninmate.org, and good luck with it." And the kid headed back to the cubicle to probably continue his calculations on how you'd fly a Tesla to the moon. Jeez. The website was one of those open source jobs, plenty clunky to navigate, but eventually Chris pieced together a couple dozen Villanuevas from the California Penal System archives, and when you narrowed it down to our Villanuevas as a subset, there were 9. You had to click on each one and wait for a screen to load. You had to click on each one and wait for a screen to load, and then link to a second screen, but he whittled it down to 3. And then he noticed he wasn't reading carefully, that 2 of them were Roland, and not Roland with an L, but Ronald with an N. So bingo, maybe. The Roland was a Roland RK listed with an address on Vermont Avenue, which, without looking it up and figuring out the cross street, sounded in the ballpark of South Central, didn't it? Then, quite unfortunately, Chris realized that second screen somehow had linked with the generic white pages sites, and all you were doing now was looking for non-inmate Roland Villanuevas. And Chris decided again he was getting too old for this stuff, and he really did have to consider moving out of the country so he could retire in peace. But here you were, and it was getting close to 6, and that would be it for the library until Monday, and he Googled Roland R.K. Villanueva by itself, and a taxi service came up, again on Vermont Avenue, and it wasn't worth trying to figure out. He almost threw caution to the wind and pulled out his own phone and called the place. But downstairs they did have a house phone, sort of like the old motel lobbies, where you make local calls for free. And it was an odd setup. Why would anyone need this? Except this was MB, and the library had recently been facelifted, and maybe they were trying to keep some of the old ways alive. It still didn't make sense, but Chris went downstairs and dialed the number. "Bottom," the answerer said. It took Chris a second, and the guy almost hung up on him, but Chris remembered that word in the cab company name someplace, and he asked to speak to Roland, please. Nothing from the answerer, but it seemed like Chris was on hold for a second, and then, "Roland speaking, may I help you?" Gee, now, could this, just like that, actually be the guy? Chris said, "Are you Roland R.K.? If you are, this is Mr. Wigan from Sky Designs. You've won a trip." "Uh-huh," Roland said. "That bad, huh?" Chris said. "Yeah, you got to give it a little more build-up there, pal. What do you really need?" "Sorry about that then," Chris said. "You're a good sport. Any other Rolands in the neighborhood? Same last name? I got the wrong one, evidently." "Hang on now. You asked me for myself, Roland R.K. Why would you do that? You're looking for someone else." The guy had a point, and there wasn't much value in disputing it. "Beats me," Chris said. "It's been a long week." "No, that part I do hear you, amigo," the guy said. "Not sure what your game is, but at least you honest about it. They do mix me up with a Roland R by itself, no K, the male sometimes. Hoover, that's all I can tell you. Later, bro." The guy hung up. And who knows what that meant, but it was like 5 to 6, and Chris hustled back upstairs to the computer and simply Googled Roland R. Villanueva, Los Angeles, and boom, there was one listing, and on My Life, where they typically tried to sell you stuff, there was one small section in that area with past addresses, which you hope might include a current one as well. And the guy showed up on West 67th Street, which Chris had a feeling, location-wise, was in the South Central mix. There was an announcement on the intercom that the Manhattan Beach Library is now closed and to please exit the northeast door. And he did one more quick cross-check, this time against the Find the Inmate site that the Asian kid gave him. And sure enough, Roland R. seemed to be on target. You'd have to confirm it, like always, but Chris had a decent feeling about this one. And now you had to figure out how to get over there and visit the guy. But it was Saturday evening, clear sky, balmy, very little breeze, and Earth, Wind, and Fire, of all people, what was left of them, were apparently playing a free concert tonight at the Redondo Marina. And there were worse ways to pass a few hours, Chris supposed.